A radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Gallant. That's a G, yo, and George.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah!
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
One at the bottom of the zone. Lau was lucky to get called out the previous pitch. Does get called out on that pitch. That's five strikeouts for Usain. One away in the fourth.
Speaking of strikeouts, I struck out with the vending machine.
What were the options?
Snickers bars.
Okay.
I'm not a chocolate guy. Thought about it. That's how hungry I am right now. These terrible looking, I think what are supposed to be sweet crackers. A Starburst roll.
Okay.
And what looks like a blueberry muffin granola bar. The problem is that's the one thing that I thought of getting. And guess what? It's the one in the vending machine where there's a rung in front of it where if I had paid for it, I wouldn't have gotten anything.
That's tough.
There's also the disgusting Starbucks, like all milk, iced coffee and Dr. Pepper.
Oh, the thing; those things just kill your teeth.
Plus, pretzel, like something
like the pretzel mix,
something like that. Yeah, and some sort of like fake ass looking Cheetos thing. I don't know.
Oh, is that the Cheeto fries?
Yeah. So, guess what? Guess what? Your boy is gonna starve.
So we only got an hour left.
I don't mind. Stealing bread from the mouths of decadence. I'm going hungry. Okay. I'm done bitching.
What song is that?
I don't know.
That's Hunger Strike by Temple of the Dog. You serious?
Yes. Yes. I was 100%.
You've never heard that before?
No.
I'm going hungry. You haven't either?
No.
What?
I'm all for two on Paul's music references.
I mean, listen.
And normally, you're the non-music guy.
The Cars, I can understand. That's an '80s band. Not knowing Temple of the Dog. I mean, that's Eddie Vedder and Chris Cornell. What is wrong with you?
I don't know. It's just maybe it's you. Maybe it's the way you're singing it.
I'm going hungry.
The funniest part is, I was like, this must be a Pearl Jam song because the way he was singing it.
Yeah. Well, Eddie Vedder and Temple of the Dog and Chris Cornell.
Yeah, I'm not familiar.
I'm baffled.
Sorry, Paul.
I'm baffled by everything. Don't be sorry.
I'm sorry we're disappointed.
It's the vending machine's fault that we're here. That on this tangent. The vending machine's fault. And yeah, we got all these salespeople who aren't even here that like are bitching and moaning about what's in there to the point where we had like an email sent out, like, hey, here's what you can put in the vending machine. And none of them are even here. Ever, by the way. Ever. End rant.
Oh, I had something on Temple of the Dog.
What do you got, Sean?
Don't feed me.
Feed
my anger. No. You don't want this.
Act of 1990 to 1992.
Yeah. But they had some bangers.
When did they become unactive?
Yeah, just a couple of years.
92 to 2016, it looks like.
I was born in 92, so.
Unbelievable.
And they had some one-off reunions, according to Wikipedia.
Well, yeah. Well, now it's a little more difficult because some deaths along the way.
Gucci.
That's what they're calling Yusei Kikuchi. You bet your bottom dollar. What a nickname.
You say
you're so Gucci, being my Kikuchi.
Desert Stroh says, Nature's Bakery Blueberry Fig Ball.
Stop. I can't transfer the energy from my hunger and rage at the people who are demanding that the vending machine be stocked with select items for the two times they're here a month. Okay? I'm sorry.
Okay. Gucci.
Don't make me have my meltdown, okay? No. If this is the last show I have, I'm going to blame that vending machine.
I'm going to blame that vending machine
for getting me fired.
Yeah, Kikuchi was very good again yesterday.
Yes, he was. He 5 2/3, 5 strikeouts, and this time around, he wasn't throwing the changeup just about every single pitch, exaggerating a little bit. He mixed it up. He adjusted for a Rays team that probably was going to adjust to him, no matter how shaky that Rays lineup might be. 11 strikeouts against Kikuchi the first time that Kikuchi donned the orange and blue of the Houston Astros. This time around, just as effective. A lot of ground balls, and honestly, if not for Chaz McCormick biffing out there, we'd be talking about a one earned run performance. Would be nice if Kikuchi could get to the sixth.
Yeah, this one was a small nitpick. Jose Altuve booted that ball.
That's true.
So he was right there.
Not the best night for the Astros defense, which generally is pretty good.
Yeah, they've had weird stretches this year where, like, I mean, look, this season's been up and down, but they've had weird stretches where they haven't been spectacular. Because of how they dominated Boston, does the, you know, you say you want to see Kikuchi face a good lineup, but we know on paper Boston's a good lineup. That's where his next start is going to be. So if he dominates Boston on Monday, does that mean anything for you, or do you kind of view Boston differently than we did going into this last
series? You know what's
series?
Interesting? Yeah, I do. I do. I think that Boston's got a good lineup statistically. It's really good. But I also feel like Boston is sliding. And, I mean, just take a look at where they are in the standings now. They lost that series to the Yankees not too long ago. I feel like their magic, if you will, is running out. And, you know, now you got Jaron Duran. He's showing up to the ballpark wearing a tank top that says F 'em after getting suspended.
Bold decision.
Choice.
Yeah, bold decision.
Interesting choice. And man, there's this website called Awful Announcing, and they do provide good content for me to work with. But the write-up for this talked about how Duran started wearing this as a tribute to his own battles with mental health, which include, you know, getting in fights with Royals fans and this most recent incident where he got into it with a fan. I love how now we're calling rage issues, anger management issues, struggles with mental health. And this article for Awful Announcing made it seem like, yeah, you know, maybe like this was an interesting shirt for Duran to wear, but mental health is serious. And I'm paraphrasing a little bit. It's ridiculous. That was a stupid thing to wear. But to bring it back to the actual Red Sox, I do think less of them after having seen them this weekend. I feel like that is a sackless team at this moment in time.
Yeah, the next test now, and this will change because JV is pitching. What day is today? Wednesday. JV is pitching tomorrow for Corpus Christi, so he could be back, or he most likely will be back next week. But as of is projected right now, Kikuchi's next start is Boston. Follow that up would either be Saturday the 24th against the Orioles, or if they go to a 6-man rotation, probably Sunday the 25th. When they play the Orioles on Sunday Night Baseball on ESPN, which will carry on the station.
Hell yeah.
But
you're
so,
home for Astros baseball on one night.
Yeah, for one night and the playoffs.
For one night only and the playoffs.
And the playoffs.
Right.
Don't forget the playoffs when baseball really matters. But Kikuchi, like, at least he's got the Red Sox and the Orioles coming up. So that does, even though I'm with you, I do view Boston differently than I did going to the weekend series just because of the way they throttled them for three games. Like, it still is. I'm curious what he does next.
They're really good against righties. He's a lefty, but we saw what Spencer Arrighetti did to them, and I feel like, at least right now, they are slumping. Baltimore is, I think, where a lot of our vibes going into the playoffs are going to be determined. If he has a good outing against Baltimore, where he gets a bunch of strikeouts, two earned runs or less, I will be feeling as good as I possibly can about Kikuchi going into the postseason.
Yeah, I think, you know, kind of going off that, one of the most serious, the series I'm most intrigued by, though, I think is actually the Royals series, just because that's who they're going to play. That's who they're probably going to play in the first round of the playoffs.
There's a part of me that still thinks that this is BS. I know that they killed the Astros in the first series of these two teams this year, but the AL Central to me, and maybe this is just because of an inherent bias against the AL Central, which none of us have taken seriously for a while. It is strange to me that they're still good. It is strange to me that the Guardians have one of the best records in baseball.
Technically, now it's the best record, at least in the American League. Yeah, I mean, I guess the wild card might not be the Royals. It could be the Red Sox or the Mariners, and I guess the Twins technically as well. But as of right now, the Astros would play a 3-game series at home against the Kansas City Royals. So that's interesting, too, because While you've played so well, it feels like it doesn't matter in a way because you are in first place in your division, but you've also made up that ground in the wild card race. You've given yourself some protection to where you're only a half game back of the wild card if you are not leading your division right now. So they've just done a really good job of turning their season around in a way that I think we all believe that they could win the division still, even when it was really bad. Like, there was still a chance. We talked about it. But the ground they've gained in every facet is truly remarkable.
Yeah, the wild card, them being back in that conversation is definitely, as you said, yes. It's a nice little safety net that you have behind you. And we'll see what happens the rest of the way. But, I mean, let the good times roll. They're on a tear. 7 wins in a row before they wrap up this season's series against the Tampa Bay Rays, who are on the verge of waving the white flag. It is Gallant and George, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the 747 at 713-780-3776. Can't wait until next week when Coochie gets hurt. Hey.
That's a mean text.
Another person asks, do you believe the Astros are dripping with Kikuchi? Juice, no. That's a bad, bad honey-glazed Branham. I'm rolling up a newspaper. Bop! Just booped you.
Right.
Get out
a
squirt gun as well.
Like psh, a dog. Psh, psh, psh,
psh, psh, psh. Yeah, you will use the squirt gun for a cat, and you use the newspaper to boop your dog. Either way, bonk, sir. Okay? And it's Gucci Kikuchi.
I got a laser pointer for my cat.
Yeah?
To play with?
Does she actually play with it?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Some cats don't.
She'll, like, climb up the wall chasing after it.
My cat was like, whatever, dude.
She's all about it. It's great.
Yeah. They're little nut jobs when you first get them. What's your cat, like 6 months?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Oh, a little baby.
5-6 months, yeah.
Meow. Meow, meow, meow. What? What are you laughing at? That's just how men talk with cats.
Should we have...
Paul, you're such a loser.
When we do one of the D'Amico press conferences, should we have Aria do one of the just speaking cat for a whole quote?
Wait, him just going meow, 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 meow?
Yeah, that wouldn't make any sense.
It'd be funny, though. I just imagine someone in their car turning on the radio and hearing that.
Meow, meow,
meow. Meow, 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 meow.
And just be like, what is happening right now?
K-makers, meow, meow, meow.
Probably already are doing that. From the 713, someone wants to call him Coochie Mane. No, it's Coochie Kikuchi.
That's not bad, though.
Kikuchi Mane.
No. It's Gucci Kikuchi. I'm sorry. I had it first, and it's hip. With the kids. Gen Z's using it. Is the alpha generation using it? Probably. Bussin' for real, on God. No cap.
Is that what's after Gen Z? Is it alpha?
Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
Gen alpha. But those are like fourth graders.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So my son's an alpha.
Well, cool. We don't know about that.
You just said he is.
I feel like the next generation is going to be beta, dude. It's just how it works, right?
Probably.
Yeah, because we went from X to Z to millennials. Like, I forget. I don't know.
It's all confusing.
I need blood sugar. Paul Gallant Show. Just kidding. See? There we go. Damn it. I'm sorry, Joe.
It's okay.
It's Gallant and George, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. 713-780-3776 is how you call in. It's how you text in. You can join us on Twitch at ESPN 97.5, on YouTube at ESPN Houston. Who's more concerning for the Houston Astros going forward than someone that we thought was in the rearview mirror? We saw him last night. You'll find out who we're talking about next. It's Gallant and George.
ESPN 97.5.
This is Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now back to Paul and Joe inside the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Ryan Presley had actually a pretty nice stretch recently where he looked a lot like the guy that we've all come to know. It's not to say that he's dominant or anything like that. It's more to say he's been reliable. And then the last four games happened, and Joe, in every single one of those games, he has allowed at least one earned run. And last night in particular, it got really dicey because it was a bases loaded situation that he eventually fought his way out of. But again, he gave up one run along the way.
Yeah, he's just not getting a lot of confidence right now from Astros fans. And I would imagine even himself and the staff when he walks out on the mound, because it's just not easy. Everything, he's really earning the nickname Stressly.
Based off the way this year has gone, there is this sinking feeling within me that if someone is going to do in the Astros this year, it's not going to be the starting pitching like the starting pitching did in last year's postseason. It's not going to be the lineup like hitters 5 through 9 did in last postseason. It's going to be one of your expensive bullpen arms blowing it. Whether that's Josh Hader, who has had his fair share of, we're paying you a lot of money and this is what you're giving us. Or it's Ryan Presley, where he's just getting older. You kind of understand how there's a bit of a decline taking place. And then you got Brian Abreu, who's had a couple of moments this year as well, maybe due to the extensive workload that he pitched with last year, and same thing this year, where he has not been as dominant as you were hoping he would be after a really good season last year.
Yeah, it's the back of the bullpen has been less than ideal for sure. I mean, it's when before the season started and people talked about the Astros World Series hopes, and when we talked about it, that's the strength of the team. Was you get to the seventh inning, who's going to beat you? Because on when you're ready to go and all your arms are ready and available, you have a Abreu, Presley, Hader. It should have been the most dominant bullpen in baseball. And there's nights where it has looked like that, to be fair. Like, it's not always been bad. But it's just they're not consistently the three of them having success. And with Presley, I definitely put him at the bottom of that group in terms of belief that they're going to get out of it cleanly. Like, if you were going to power rank him most confident to least confident, I go, if it's a safe situation, I would go Hader, Abreu, Presley.
Hader isn't a different conversation because he has that stuff. Presley, I feel like if you got to pick Abreu ahead of him just because he's younger. With Presley, it just feels like it's no longer as easy as it used to be.
Is Taylor Scott ahead of Ryan Presley?
See, that's where it really gets fun. Scott's had a good year.
He has had a good year.
And for what it's worth, sometimes a bullpen arm is just really good for 1 year. It's such a volatile thing, which is why the Montero contract was so effing stupid. Oh, I still can't get past how dumb that contract was. Everyone should have known it was dumb. Everybody. But to bring it back to this year, because Montero is no longer on this team, Scott has gotten the Astros out of some pretty tough situations of late. I feel like he even got the Astros out of a situation that was created by Ryan Presley over the weekend. Am I wrong on that front?
No, I don't believe so.
Was that Friday?
I think so.
Or was it Saturday?
No, not Friday, because Friday night was when Presley was in with a 5-run lead in the pouring rain, which still makes no sense.
Gotcha. Okay. Because I know Saturday things got very stressful, but it was because of Abreu, right? And then yeah. Hader allowed the double.
Yeah. Presley is just so fascinating because you would think, like, at some point, maybe they'll just start to try to use Scott in these high leverage situations and see, you know, make sure there's no mental hiccups with him and see if he can handle it. But Ryan Presley's contract vested. He is under contract for $14 million for 2025 at 36 years old. 2 years past when you're supposed to play baseball, according to me. But so he's here next year. But the way he's pitching, I would lean Scott in front of Presley right now, and I would like to see him get those opportunities. I mean, I think there's a reason why, you know, in yesterday's game is a good example where Kikuchi gets you 5 2/3. It's Abreu is the guy who comes in, gets the out, and then goes back out for the next inning. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know if they're going to take a $14 million player in Ryan Presley, who won you a World Series, and demote him out of the eighth inning or seventh inning.
I mean, there's no more Dusty Baker where we have these unwritten rules and deference to your elders. So that should not be an obstacle. If he's not getting it done, then, I mean, don't put him in that spot. Pretty simple.
I tend to agree. It's just like it's just not how baseball often works. Like they just they don't follow that methodology that often. I mean, you have to. I think you have to really fall apart for, and sometimes it's too late for that. I mean, because of Presley's recent stretch, like it's still there's still belief he can get it done though.
But they put Montero basically out to pasture this year. Like, pretty early, too. Like, I can't remember the last high-leverage situation that Montero pitched in before they DFA'd him.
Yeah, it'd been a while. And not in anything like a, and not at least not pitching anything that was relevant.
Right.
So it had been a while.
It was like only if there was one of those games where they had worked the bullpen for the couple of games before that, or it was game's over, F it. We don't care anymore.
Yeah.
This game's done. Let's just have somebody get us to the finish line, no matter where that actual finish line is.
It's gonna be fascinating to see how they approach this towards the end of the season. Because if Presley continues to be shaky like this, I wonder if they will make a change.
I actually trust them to adapt, and I think they will.
I mean, they did it with the lineup all year. There's no reason why they shouldn't do it with the bullpen.
They did it going into this year by signing Hader.
Yeah,
and I mean, that might be hard to handle two demotions in 1 year, but ultimately, you're on a major league team that has been to seven straight American League Championship Series. And if you're not pitching well, do you want to be selfishly, because of your own ego, the one that's holding up what's actually in the best interest of the team? And some people are like that. I feel like Presley will not be like that.
I would hope not. I mean,
it definitely makes it easier to have gone through it earlier in the year. Might be a bit depressing too, but I wouldn't think he would.
How do you feel? How would you feel if you were Ryan Presley? Did you see what his mom did?
His mom is very vocal online. That's what
she,
I know.
She
about
went on
mom.
Social media to defend him.
What did she do this time?
She said, "Yes, I am on Twitter. I have the utmost faith in my son and his performance as an Astro."
Was this last night?
This was August 8th, so 6 days ago.
Okay, a couple days ago.
"I am truly sad that the fans that once loved Ryan are now the haters. I'm incredibly thankful he's not on social media. He got you a World Series and you still hate. I get why she did it, but I don't know if I was Ryan, if I love it."
I'd hate this. I love having a very supportive significant other or family member, but look, like, you in sports are going to have moments where people look at you and you drive them crazy. And bullpen in particular, everyone thinks their bullpen sucks.
Yes.
Everyone thinks that. I remember feeling that way when I was covering the Mariners in Seattle. I remember feeling that at times with the Boston Red Sox growing up. Everyone thinks their bullpen is the worst. And then you compare it with other bullpens and you're like, oh, wait, well, they're just not perfect all the time, which is really hard to be. So you're playing a position where it's just thankless by nature. It's essentially like being a kicker. You're supposed to do your job. You're going to get noticed when you screw it up. She should know this by now.
Yeah, it's part of it. I mean, even like to your point, I remember Astros fans in 2022 when they had the most dominant run in the history of baseball, basically, in the postseason. People would find a reason to complain. They would call into postgame shows and complain about some decision or one bad pitch, even though they got out of it. Like, it is probably the most thankless job in sports. Because kickers, it's like, is it really even a football player?
yeah, kickers have that against them.
But kickers, you're asked to do it way less than bullpen arms. Like with at least bullpen pitchers, you might ask them to have three or four big moments in a week, where a kicker, you might only hit one big kick every 4 weeks. So if you miss that one, it always feels a little bit worse.
You also get credit for making it way more than I feel like, especially a setup man or a seventh inning guy gets in baseball for getting in and out of an inning clean.
As a kicker?
Yes. I think that, like,
I don't know, man. I think now we look at kickers missing 60-yard field goals and we're like, jeez, this guy blows. I think there's an unfair standard that kickers are held to these days where you just expect every single kick to be made. And, I mean, we're not that far away from when guys were toe-balling it and you were lucky to have a kicker who was 50% plus.
But there's no seventh inning guy who gets to be Adam Vinatieri.
Yeah, to have the heroic moment.
Yes, because normally if you're that good of a reliever, you're either the closer and it's more of a these guys don't have a chance. Like, the game's over, like a Mariano Rivera, where the game's over when this guy comes in. But as far as a seventh inning guy or an eighth inning guy, that's just like, congrats, you did your job.
Hey, that's like, it's like John Weeks. John Weeks is the seventh inning guy.
Yeah.
Because he's just, you know, just snapped the ball back there.
Or you have to make your own mess and then get out of it. But even that, like Hector Neris did a lot last season.
Yeah, you have to be fun. I was about to bring up Hector Neris. You have to be fun like Hector Neris.
But even that, I mean, crazy. he's like a fun version of Stressley.
Yeah.
Where he is making his own situation where you're like, oh my God, stop walking people. And then he strikes someone out, yells a couple words at him, and keeps it moving.
I do miss that.
He's like a kicker who dances.
Martin Gramatica?
Oh.
Without injuring himself.
Okay.
Without injuring himself. That was Bill Gramatica.
Yeah.
Not Martin.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, correct.
There was a Gramatica mafia of kickers in the NFL. I think there was a third one. He might have played for South Florida, now that I think about it, as opposed to playing for the actual Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But yeah, there are a lot of Gramatica kickers.
Man, I tore his ACL jumping up in the air. That's a tough look.
It is a tough look. You got to be careful. You got to stretch. You got to be limber. And now you know. It is Gallant and George. He is Joe. I am Paul. We got Sean behind the glass. 713-780-3776. To call, to text, our friend George Springer was victimized by the Blues last night. We'll discuss it in another episode of The Ref Show. There's also a documentary coming out about one of the all-time ref bleep-ups in sports history. Stick around.
ESPN 97.5.
This is Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now back to Paul and Joe inside the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
It is Gallant and George, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. So, George Springer, in a game last night between the Toronto Blue Jays and Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, of California, of the United States of America, of North America, formerly of Pangea, of planet Earth, of the solar system, of the Milky Way galaxy, of the known universe. And in that game, George Springer looked to be hit on the foot by a pitch. For whatever reason, the umpires of this game did not review the call, which led to George Springer losing his mind and getting tossed. What I found most interesting about last night, Joe, was not just that ex-Astro George Springer lost his mind, which always seemed like something that would never happen. It was that the Blue Jays broadcast, the biased one, and the Angels broadcast were all like, yo, what you doing here, Blue?
Yeah, this is the second time this has happened. Obviously, we saw it happen to Jose Altuve. Like, how can you not review this and get it correct? And you're seeing now two players in Jose Altuve and George Springer, who are pretty cool, calm, and collected, absolutely lose their mind. George, way more than Jose Altuve. I mean, Jose was pissed. But George Springer looked like he was ready to fight.
Yeah.
I was very, very surprised.
I'm curious as to why they didn't. I mean, you can review this, right?
Remember, they reviewed Altuve, remember?
We've seen it happen a couple of times. Yeah, and with Altuve,
they got it wrong.
With Altuve, they did screw it up, and Altuve got angry about it as well. Obviously, you can't really use as evidence, well, he's more mad than he normally is, so we got to give him the call. And I suppose that these camera angles that they have aren't good enough to determine whether or not it hit somebody, but I mean, it, everybody seemed to agree on the replay that it hit him. Maybe it was because of Springer's reaction to it, but I wonder how much longer umpires are going to last. It really feels like every story we hear about them just makes them seem more pointless. And they do seem rather replaceable.
But see, this is where I think that they're not. Like, because he moves his foot, and to me, it looks clear. I guess the argument is they think it could have bounced in front or underneath his foot. I guess not underneath, but like right in front of it as he moved it. This is where, like, it's hard to replace these guys. My issue is, honestly, is just, then why do we have replay? Like, what is the purpose of replay if they don't have camera angles that are good enough to determine this? That if they can't zoom in and get high enough quality to exactly determine this, then like honestly, like the what is the point? Like, what is the point of having a replay system if it can't be corrected? Like, why do we waste our time? Why do we waste? I'd rather the umpires just get it wrong, and we're all just arguing about it the next day, and we're looking at it later. Then it just blows my mind that you have this whole team. Like, they show every time there's a challenge, you know, on Space City Home Network, they show New York, they show, you know, what they're doing.
Yeah, they got a headquarters now.
Like, and you still can't get it right. Then like, what's the purpose? But like, if everyone is reacting like this, then it's usually pretty obvious that the player's right. But he was angry. Angry, angry.
He was an angry, angry fellow.
He has Snickers.
Or anything. Which would be nice if we had, you know, a vending machine that was stocked.
That was unintentional.
It felt like it was intentional.
I was just thinking of the Snickers commercial.
You get angry when you're hungry. Yeah, that's true. That's true indeed. There's going to be an E60 episode, by the way, about when umpire Jim Joyce screwed up the perfect game bid for Armando Galarraga for the Colorado Rockies back in the day. That was one of those moments after the fact where Jim Leland and Galarraga all went out of their way to show some support after the fact to Jim Joyce, because he felt really bad about it. But there is a part of me that feels like we shouldn't have.
Really?
I mean, be kind and all that, especially when somebody admits that they were wrong. But all right, that's one of 27 perfect games ever, and he screwed it up on the last out.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you rather screw up and be wrong by making the call that's favorable for the pitcher, as opposed to getting it right? I mean, if you're going to screw it up,
that's a good question.
Just screw it up that way.
Error on the tie goes to the pitcher, basically.
Yeah.
Error on the side of history.
Exactly. Yeah.
I think I would. I think I'd rather give someone a perfect game and be wrong than what actually happened, because a perfect game is probably called wrong every single time anyways because of balls and strikes. Like, there's probably a strike three call that's actually a ball four, and that they called strike three, so they, you know, the perfect game stays. Yeah, I'd rather do that.
When was this game?
2010.
Yeah. People were calling me out because I guess I got the team names wrong. I don't care. This is all that matters is the guy screwed it up, right? Could've been playing for the
I think he was on the was he on the Tigers?
Yeah, he was on the Tigers.
It was against,
I don't remember who was playing.
I thought it was Tigers, Rockies, whatever.
Okay. Not important. Could you say that this is what kind of necessitated MLB to get instant replay? Because I feel like they got instant replay the next year. In my mind, they got instant replay in like 2012, 2011.
They are very slow.
Yeah, because it was an honest to God like pushback against it when it was being debated, and the entire debate was like, well, football has had review for 20 years. Why doesn't MLB
it's
on
very strange
on especially a play at first? That's like the easiest thing to get with replay.
Yeah. They actually started before this happened.
Oh, really?
But
we're not throwing a perfect game this second.
It was no, but it was limited. It was very, very, very limited. So, like, this says that the only thing in 2008 you could challenge was home runs.
The worst thing about this was that if you go to a game, you can't see the replay. I don't know if that's still the case, but it feels like they go out of their way to make umpires not look like dumbasses unless they're Angel Hernandez and they sue baseball. Otherwise, if you're an umpire, I mean, they are going to defend you. And I'm really curious about this E60 documentary from this perspective. Is the whole thing going to be about sportsmanship and about being a good person and being kind? Because if that's the case, fart noises.
Or is it going to be like how Armando Galarraga, how his life got ruined. Like, just tell the actual story. You think they should? Do you guys think they should reverse it? Should they go back in time?
Nah, fix it? No, I don't. I agree with Paul. I actually don't think you can do that. As much as it sucks, I don't think you can go back. It's the flip side of vacating wins in college football.
Like, yeah.
He didn't go out there and celebrate that night because he threw a perfect game. Like, you can't give him a perfect game.
His last appearance in baseball, Armando Galarraga, can you guess what team he played for?
The Rockies?
No. No, actually, his last appearance ever was August 19th, 2012 for the Houston Astros.
There you go.
But can you guess his last ever baseball appearance?
Wait. Mm. Oh, that was his last MLB. Was it for the Skeeters back in the day?
Nope.
Was he the setup man for
not
for
even warm.
Tracy McGrady?
No, no, no. This is I didn't even know about this team.
It's not Trevor Bauer's Mexican League team.
Is it the Savannah Bananas?
The color of the uniforms that he played for in his last baseball outing, similar to the Savannah Bananas.
Yellow?
Can't believe you've never heard of this team. Truly.
Who is it?
Oh, man, unbelievable.
I feel like it's going to be in a place on earth that I didn't know plays baseball.
Unbelievable. Armando Galarraga, last pitch for the China Trust Brothers.
What a name.
Can you guess where he played?
China.
Taiwan. Nope, wrong. Taiwan. Yeah. But one China.
I know that, and they have their own league. The CPBL or
the
something.
The CPBL, correct.
Oh, yeah. This is not the one I would gamble on during the pandemic.
It was one of them that
I did not partake. Yeah. I participated in the KBO.
Korea only. Yeah. I gotcha.
I was a KBO gambler. Dragons.
That would be crazy if Galarraga in this documentary was like, yeah, I had to pitch in China.
Because of Jim Joyce.
Because of my 28-out perfect game. His numbers in China,
for those interested,
1-5 with a 4.47 ERA.
Oof.
Just 12 strikeouts.
That's tough.
Not a good way to
only
go.
12 strikeouts.
His Wikipedia page says career highlights and awards. Pitched the 28 out perfect game June 2nd, 2010.
In parentheses, unofficial. That's not a real thing.
That's not a real thing.
That's not a real award.
That's not a real award. There's a guy that got to first base. It was technically a no hitter.
Was it?
I guess it would have been ruled a hit, probably.
Yeah, it was probably ruled a hit.
Yeah, because
he just beat out the throw.
Yeah, it's
Miguel Cabrera should have spiked it.
I think he just smiles. Like that, I remember. He just kind of smiles and shock.
I throw my umpire I throw my glove at the umpire.
Start a war,
or I throw my umpire into the stands. Just lift him and throw him like he's a Jazzy Jeff in Fresh Prince of Bel Air. Galana George. He is Joe. I'm Paul. Sometimes the references hit. 713-780-3776 to call, to text. You can join us on YouTube at ESPN Houston. You can also vote for the finalists for Rock the Mic. Got what it takes to rock the mic. You can also join us on Twitch at ESPN975. We wrap things up with Garbage Time after this.
ESPN 97.5.
We'll be right back after this break.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Last chance to dance. If you want to jump in, you know how to do it. Will Anderson, also known as the Terminator. That's his nickname. Gave himself that nickname. I'm not sure. I know that he has a necklace with a Terminator skull pendant on it, but he did an article, an interview, which was turned into article form by Tyler Dunn of the Go Long Substack. We've had Tyler Dunn on the show a couple of times before, and Anderson is terrified of the dark and sleeps with the TV on because of childhood pranks by his five older sisters growing up. They scarred me. Will says he panics in pitch black rooms. They trap him in a closet or lock him in a dark basement. My God, that sounds like some Harry Potter stuff.
trauma. And now he takes out his unresolved frustrations on opposing team quarterbacks.
What do you, if you watch TV at night to go to sleep, like what do you have on there though? You gotta have like just like Food Network, background noise.
One Tree Hill has been my recent fall asleep watching experience of choice.
Okay.
For those who don't know, it's a pretty awful and yet amazing soap opera that was on the WB. So it's not even a soap opera for adults. It's a soap opera for teenagers. It's not good, but listen, it's good to put on in the background. I think that's a good one, Joe. I also think that Planet Earth or anything where David Attenborough is narrating, that's the way to go.
Yeah, that makes sense. You can't watch a show like you're invested in, because then you're going to miss something.
Yeah, and there's a lot of shows that have action in it, and you're probably going to get a little bit amped up watching something. You want to watch something where it's low investment in it, and it's also nice to have a nearly 100-year-old British man talk you to sleep.
The walrus mates with another walrus by putting its tusk in her ear. And then he's got another tusk under his belly.
I was wondering where.
This one's not made of ivory.
Oh, man.
David, calm down, sir.
Yeah.
You don't tell me how to operate when I watch The Wild.
Did we just come up with a million-dollar idea?
What?
Planet Earth After Dark?
Probably.
Yeah.
The sorority girl's skirt was hiked up very much at the bar. She leaned over, hoping to attract a mate. And there were several suitors. They fought each other. One of them pulled out a switchblade knife and stabbed the other in the neck. And then the woman found him so attractive that she performed an act upon him that would be frowned upon generally in public.
We'll add this to the D'Amico Ryan's.
Read
D'Amico Ryan's quotes.
Okay. But, David Attenborough narrated stuff. That's a good way to fall asleep. Will Anderson, I would advise you do that.
I'm scared of the dark.
If it's just the dark, can you just leave it on mute?
Possibly. You could.
Yeah, that might help.
Yeah, that's very possible.
Just leave SportsCenter or something on mute. Just
that could help. That's got to be tough. I had an older sister that when we were living together, because my parents split up, I moved to Florida with my mom. My dad and my sister stayed up in Massachusetts. But when we were growing up together, my sister, who was a year older, my sister used to terrify me by impersonating Slappy the Dummy from the TV show version of The Night of the Living Dummy, an R.L. Stein book. She used to do this creepy-ass smile, and it would drive me crazy, once to the point where, like Skip Bayless, I locked myself in the bathroom with a steak knife.
For your sister?
Yeah. She was terrified. I was six.
How old were you?
Six.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wow, she was seven?
Did she ever apologize for that?
No, I got in trouble, too. Like, my sister was a genius and would get me to tell myself all the time, too, which was the worst.
What are you scared of, Paul? You got any? I'm scared of heights.
Heights.
5'6", so I like to stay low to the ground. Slappy the Dummy. Yeah, Slappy the Dummy. Yeah. But I don't do roller coasters, really, because I don't like heights. That's really it for me. Mm-hmm. That's like my main ones.
Trying to think of other things. Fear itself.
Mm.
Whoa.
I just saluted.
I will say.
I'm scared that sometimes I work too hard. I care too much.
Okay.
I'm definitely scared of that.
You know what I might be scared of now? My ears getting blown out again if the power goes out of the building like it did yesterday.
Yeah, you know what? I'm scared of the electricity that's running through the
that powers our station?
Yeah.
I'm scared of that, too.
Shocked to death.
You know, whether it shocks you or just doesn't work for a week, it's frustrating from time to time. All right, time for a little garbage time before we get the bleep out of here.
Oh, I love trash.
Garbage time.
It's garbage.
Starts now.
I'm the trash man.
This is garbage.
Texter, I cannot read what you just said you're afraid to do, but I agree with you. I don't like doing that stuff either. So, as we wrap things up with a little garbage time, a YouTuber has put together an 8-minute and 30-second reel
of missed Angel Reese layups.
How many have you watched?
In a way, we are all watching the WNBA to watch her.
To see how many bricks it is?
Mm-hmm.
8.5 minutes?
8.5 minutes.
Of layups?
Missed layups. She gets a lot of rebounds.
That's true.
Olympic breakdancing will not happen in the Los Angeles Olympics. Pour one out.
Good. There's a petition about that lady, about Ray Gun.
About Ray Gun?
That she allegedly was the committee and her husband was the coach. So she basically put herself in the Olympics even though she sucked.
Okay.
So.
Well, hey, listen. If you can get into the Olympics by any means necessary, you may as well.
Do it.
Good for her. Jim Harbaugh opting out as the honorary captain for Michigan's opener and national title celebration to focus on the Chargers. Did they just tell him not to show up?
Soft boys?
I think it is soft boys. You're a Michigan man, and you won them their first national title in 20-plus years. You got to be there, man.
Yeah.
The Chargers don't matter. They're not doing anything this year.
And there's no game that week. It's a terrible excuse. He should be. I know, they wouldn't have brought AJ back right away here for the Ashes, but eventually they did, bring him back and welcome him. If Michigan just starts to pretend like Jim Harbaugh doesn't exist, they deserve to get lifetime bans.
I agree.
Soft boys.
And one last one. Royce White.
I saw this.
Got elected to the... or at least he's up for nomination as the Republican nominee in the Minnesota State Senator race.
Good luck. I mean, I guess.
I gotta say, if you're gonna nominate this guy, for all the people that the right sides with, you're gonna nominate a guy who wouldn't show up to work.
I mean,
who would bitch and moan about his mental health all the time.
I guess he can just drive across Minnesota, doesn't have to fly anywhere.
Yeah, that's what I can't wait to find out. He can't fly, right? He's never gonna go to DC.
He's gotta take the tour bus.
What are you doing? Unbelievable. I could not stand Royce White back in the day. And for him to grift this way to get back in the national consciousness despairs me. Clearly, that's how you get famous these days. And on that note, I'm going to go get a snack. A gosh darn snack. For our texters, Twitchers, YouTubers, and callers. For Sean Mapes. For Joe George. I am merely Paul Gallant. So long. Farewell. Have yourselves a wonderful Wednesday. The Killer Bees are up next. Peace!
ESPN 97.5.